From Decatur to Dunwoody, from Tucker to Toco Hills, from Chamblee to Stone Mountain, this is the voice of commerce in DeKalb County. Now, broadcasting from the Business Radio X studio in downtown Decatur, this is DeKalb Business Today.
And welcome into the latest edition of DeKalb Business Today and DeKalb Business Radio. My name is Matt Holmes. Glad to have a great panel of guests with us on a Friday morning. Before we get to them, I want to remind you that DeKalb Business Radio is on social media. You can follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook. Make sure to catch us live each Friday on DeKalb.BusinessRadioX.com. And if you don't catch us live, download our free podcast on our website or on iTunes. Now, let's get to our guest now. And our first guest is Kristen Diver with System Happy Professional Organization. Kristen, good morning. Glad to have you here.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. So tell me how you get from career as an economic forecaster to a Spanish interpreter to a European tour guide and to now professional organization.
Well, I feel as if when I got to be about 34, 35, I finally discovered what I wanted to be when I grew up. And so I cycled through all these different careers for a while. And I've had my business almost 10 years. And I'm not bored. It's always challenging. I love it. And so I feel this is it.
You live and work here in Decatur.
I do.
You are a graduate of Emory.
I am.
Which is a perfect segue to our second guest, who is Brian Goble. He works at Emory, the Goizueta Business School. You're the director of the Start Me Accelerator Program. What exactly is that?
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Thanks for having us. The Start Me Accelerator Program really is a program that helps us produce more and more small businesses here in DeKalb County. Particularly in areas that are of lower or moderate income. So we've run the program since 2013 in the Clarkston community, working with a lot of new Americans that are starting and growing businesses. And we've recently expanded to the Eastlake Kirkwood community as well. So if you think of it, it's a 14-week opportunity for folks to get some needed business training. More importantly, connections to mentors to help them, coach them along the way. And lastly, and probably most importantly, access to capital. We have a loan pool of about $120,000 we've invested in DeKalb-focused businesses here in the communities.
How does that work? How do they find you or find out about you?
Yeah, we are really, really grassroots. We put flyers and posters up all around our communities. We are truly place-based, so that the businesses need to be operating or the owners or residents of a Clarkston or Eastlake community. So we're out there, feet on the street, doing information sessions in the fall, putting posters up, flyers and book bags, going to PTA meetings, neighborhood councils, even the NPU meetings, which not as everyone's favorite to go to, but we're there. And we get about 80 applications each year in each community. And the tough job is right now, this time of year, before we get started with our January programs, is getting those 80 to the 15 that go through our program. So we've gotten some good interest in the community, which we're thankful for.
We've done a few things here at DeKalb Business Radio with the Goizueta Business School, and there's a lot of different programs that are running there. How did you settle on helping and working with small businesses?
Yeah, I mean, the business school, I think, is doing a lot of great things, some global, some local. And for us, we really are a representative of our social enterprise center at the business school called Social Enterprise at Goizueta. So our whole effort is really, how do we use business markets and business acumen to create societal change? And part of it is, we've researched entrepreneurship, and what we realized is it's a great tool to really lift the world. And it's a great tool that we can, you know, lift local communities with. We know there's promising entrepreneurs in our lower income communities here in Atlanta. You know, that they're not broken. The promising entrepreneurs are there. The ecosystems around them are broken. So what we do is apply a lot of the research that we see around, how do you make sure that folks have the knowledge, networks, and capital to succeed? And we've kind of taken that from, you know, Silicon Valley, where there's a lot of that, and taken it to a place like Eastlake or Clarkston, where there isn't as much, and kind of infuse it to help people thrive. And so we've seen bakeries and catering companies and, you know, electricians and handymen kind of get started and grow their businesses. And so that's kind of the idea, is not only is it important for the business school to teach it and research it, but how do we apply it to help our communities thrive?
Well, I want to get into coming up a little bit later how some of our listeners can help some of the companies that you're working with. We'll get to that. I want to jump back to Kristen, though. And, you know, with System Happy, tell us exactly what it is that you do for companies.
So I work with tiny businesses, usually 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people, often under $1 million. I specialize in financial stuff, and particularly there's an accounting software out there called QuickBooks that a lot of small businesses use, and I'm an expert in that, and I do a lot of training, both one-on-one training. I give classes as well. sometimes people will come to me and want to set up their QuickBooks for them and teach them how to use it. Other times people have just a gigantic mess and they need me to fix it all, give it back to them in perfect condition and teach them how to maintain that. I'm not the bookkeeper though going forward. I train the bookkeeper, and in the case of a lot of small businesses that the owners wear a lot of hats, mm-hmm. they're the bookkeeper as well, whether they want to be or not. And so I teach them how to do this as most efficiently as possible.
So what does a gigantic mess look like? I'm sure you've gone into certain situations, certain companies, and you're like, okay, what do I have to do here? What have you seen?
Right. Well, for example, I had a client a couple years ago where the CPA was working regularly with that business and said, listen, I can't work my magic anymore. You have to go find someone that will really clean this up so that the numbers that we're looking at, the reports that we're running are accurate. I can trust them when I file your taxes, and you can trust them when you're looking for business decisions to make. So often it's because people have just miscategorized things that they don't know where they should go. And I tell them what to do with it.
Once you get them, once they contract you and you're giving them your services, is it easy for them after you have kind of taught them what to do to kind of go through the program? Is QuickBooks that simple?
Well, I think sometimes QuickBooks can seem deceptively simple, and it does take, I find, at least about 10 hours of training for people to completely get it and know what they're doing and keep it maintained going forward. So part of what I do is once we figure out, okay, this is in good condition right now, I provide support afterward, because sometimes people will go back to it and get stuck, and then they can call me, how do I do this? Where do I click? What happens here?
So. DeKalb Business Radio here on DeKalb Business Today. Matt Holmes talking with Kristen Diver, the president of System Happy. Now, you mentioned you recommend that people keep their business money and their personal money separate. Why is that important?
Correct. Yeah, I see this all the time where people, well, first of all, if you have a business, you should have a business bank account. And that bank account should only be used for your business expenses. And you shouldn't go shopping or Christmas shopping for your kids from your business account. And likewise, with your personal money, you shouldn't buy business things with your personal money. The reason why is because it just makes it a lot more complicated later on to pull out what you use for business. And at the end of the year, when you do file your taxes, it's important that all of your business expenses are in QuickBooks or in your Excel file or wherever how you keep it. Because you file taxes based upon your profit. And if your expenses aren't in there, then you're going to be paying a little bit more in taxes than you need to.
Now, how do you get your name out there? Because I'm sure there are a lot of small businesses who sit there and say, boy, we probably could be doing this better. How do they find out about you?
Sure. So I am a QuickBooks Pro Advisor. And if anyone is using QuickBooks or QuickBooks Online and you get so frustrated and say, I need someone help to help me, there's a find a local expert. And so I'm listed on the QuickBooks website, perhaps maybe two or three in the Atlanta area. And so that's how I get most of my clients, because they look on the QuickBooks website and they find me through there.
Now, you're also the president-elect of the Georgia chapter of the National Association of Professional Organizers.
Correct.
That's a mouthful. So professional organizers, is it all working with such small businesses? Are there people who, I guess, are equipped to work with bigger companies?
Right. Well, in professional organizing, there are many, many different niches. There are some people that do residential, is what we call it. They'll do garages and closets and kitchens and things like that, or toy rooms. And there are another niche of professional organizing where we address businesses. And there are some people that do more corporate work, which mm-hmm. really falls into more productivity training, and things like that. And some of us who do small businesses. So there's lots and lots of different niches within professional organizing.
So what are some of the incorrect assumptions that you see new small businesses making? People who are going out and doing it for themselves for the very first time.
Right. Well, I'm sure Brian can relate to this, because we were just talking about this earlier, how most of the time small business owners just want to close their eyes when it comes to their financials and their numbers. And it's complicated. They don't want to learn it. So they just don't do anything. And then they'll get to the end of the year or 2 or 3 years later and say, oh, I need to file taxes and I need to know what my numbers are. And you need to have that data to be able to know, what should I do with my business? What decisions should I make? Unless you might have an idea as to how your business is doing, but unless you've got some hard numbers in front of you, it's really hard to really know for sure. So I'd say number one, even if you're thinking about starting a business and you're starting to spend a little money, you might go to a coffee shop with someone, you might travel somewhere to do some research on this business idea. I would start immediately logging and keeping those receipts and logging the money that you spend. Because then when you do set up some kind of an accounting system, I often, you know, I prefer recommending QuickBooks, but there are other accounting systems out there that people use. Then start that as soon as you can and learn how to use it as soon as you can.
So you talked about some of the big messes that you've walked in and helped clean up. Mm-hmm. What have you seen on the other end? Is there kind of coming out of your program, coming out of having you help them and get kind of organized, I guess is the best word mm-hmm. for it. What's the reaction from these business owners?
Well, it's just a lot less stress, a lot less stress. I had one client that, you know, had a huge, huge mess, didn't file their taxes for 10 years, was scared to go and open their mailbox, wouldn't open their mailbox right. for weeks because they were just so, so terrified about what they would find. And so now it's just a lot less stress. They understand what to do with their business. They can make decisions where they couldn't before. Before they were just really stuck. And so I'm really taking them from a place of just stress to hopefully being confident about their business. And, you know, it's good if business grows. You can employ more people, hopefully enjoy your life a little more because your business is doing well. So
in a lot of cases, a fresh start.
Correct.
All right. Find out more. Systemhappy.com is the website. She's on Twitter at SmallBizGirl and on Facebook as well. Kristen Diver from System Happy. We appreciate you being here
today.
Let's get back with Brian Goebel from the Start Me Accelerator program there at Emory's Guizetta Business School. You talked about why you do this. Why is it important to invest in the micro businesses in our communities?
Yeah, and it's great that Kristen works with the same type of folks. I'm actually going to bring her in to help with the program. We joke about the financial flu. And people kind of catching that. So we're glad we can bring you in as a cure. Small businesses are really important. I think a lot of times people overlook them. We think about those huge global Fortune 500s that we have headquartered in Atlanta, which are phenomenal. Mm-hmm. We appreciate having them here in our communities. But micro businesses are really the lifeblood of our local communities. And micro business means a company with four or less employees. It typically means it requires less than $50,000 to get started. So that's 92% of businesses in America. People often overlook that. So that is the massive majority of businesses in this country. And they create a huge impact. 26 million private sector jobs are created by micro businesses. And those businesses buy from other businesses, large and small, and kind of have an additional effect as it reaches out. And I think the other key piece for us, why it's important is in particular, female-headed households, that if the female owns a micro business, they typically earn $8,000 to $13,000 more. Than a female-headed household that is just working a typical job and not being owner of a business. So we find it as a way to stabilize households as well in our community. So it creates a lot of jobs, creates a lot of interesting products and services. And I think it makes the communities like downtown Decatur great. We're not talking about the huge businesses here in town. We're talking about micro businesses that make Ponce a great street and you know, Virginia Highlands a great area. It's really about micro businesses when we look at it at the end of the day.
You mentioned that 92% of businesses are these micro businesses. And I think you hear, you know, X number of new businesses, startups are destined to fail. Is that number higher, lower for micro businesses? Is that why it's important for them to get these kinds of grants and investments?
Yeah, I mean, I think that risk and that risk factor is the same whether it's small or large. I think that's, you know, part of the challenge. You look at VC funds out in Silicon Valley and, you know, right. if they get 1 out of 10, they're happy. Mm-hmm. You know, and we've looked at, you know, our entrepreneur pool. We've worked with about 52 entrepreneurs over the last 3 years and 36 are still in operation, which I think is a fairly good batting average.
It is. Given
the nature of business and the challenging times, I think, over the last few years in terms of people getting access to credit. So what we try to do is our feel is the risk will still be there, but we feel when folks have, you know, strengthened their business skills and actually know what accounting is and know how organizing their accounting is important, know what marketing is, know how to access capital. If they have that business skills and then more importantly, have mentors and coaches they can turn to help them kind of work through challenges and help them grow their business and then have some access to some loan money, we think that you will be far more likely to succeed. And that's why Start Me is here and why it's focused on micro businesses in our lower income communities.
Tell me more about these businesses that you've had success with. What types of businesses are they? Are they companies that we've heard of here in DeKalb County?
Well, a lot of them, hopefully you will hear about them if you haven't heard about them yet. For us, it's a wide variety of businesses. So I'd say we have a whole food arena. We have bakers and caterers and chefs. And there's a couple of bakeries we've recently made investments in. One is called Crumbs and one's called Sweet Treats and More. So if you're looking for holiday gifts, phenomenal. Okay. Phenomenal bakeries here. And a lot of them cook out of their homes at this point or commercial kitchens, but have fully functional e-commerce. Work with different catering companies, and one of them's a chef actually from Jamaica, and it's called Love That Jerk.
Oh.
So love the name, great
clever
name.
Yeah,
they do a lot of corporate events and activities, and they're hopefully working their way towards a brick and mortar. And a lot of our businesses are kind of in that stage of working from home, or are using commercial kitchen and shared office space and working their way to brick and mortar. You know, we work with a lot of makers and artisans. I think that's a really interesting, talented community that makes all of our lives a lot more interesting. We all enjoy the arts, and a lot of our artists aren't trained in business at all. And so part of our program really looks to target how do we work with more makers and artisans to help them get those kind of business chops to help them succeed. So we've worked with a children's book illustrator called Gas Arts. That's Gas Art Gifts out at North DeKalb Mall. Okay. Greg Christie, phenomenal book illustrator, children's book illustrator, and gave him some extra help in terms of how does he launch his business and get organized and kind of get a marketing plan in place. So those are the kind of businesses. Work with a lot of education services and tutoring places. One's called Fun Weird Science, which is a great kind of fun way that he does both private kind of events and parties, but also teaches science teachers in our public schools how to be more innovative in their classrooms and bring kind of that STEM education to bear. And then we work with a lot of kind of hands-on folks, electricians, handymen, those type of folks that I know I need help with on a weekly basis at my home to do repair. So folks that might have been working for a large contracting organization are getting their own trucks, getting their own tools and supplies and getting started and hiring folks. So those are the kind of businesses that we see. It runs the spectrum.
You mentioned there's an educational component to what you do, because a lot of small businesses, they're really good at what they do, but they don't have that business background, that business acumen. Is that the number one reason that a small business will fail? The fact that they just don't have that business know-how? They're really good at what they do, but they just haven't been there before?
I don't know if it's the number one, but it's a critical factor. And that's why we really look at it as three things: that you need knowledge, networks, and capital to succeed. Depending on where your business is or what industry, you know, one or the other is, it might be more important at a certain time. But, we feel that minimally everyone needs to have a core foundation. And that's kind of like, if you don't know what marketing it is, if you don't understand your customers, you're not likely going to succeed. If you don't know about your books and finances and taxes and risk and insurance and those things, you're also going to be putting yourself and your family at risk in addition to your business. So yeah, those things are all critical. And at the same time, we really look at business acumen and knowledge coming through a lot of networks and networks of people. So a lot of times, small business owners, there's kind of that myth that folks toil in isolation in that garage and they create that next great idea. And, you know, working hard, being your own boss is hard. You have to put in a lot of time. But I think the networks are really critical. So we try to connect all of our entrepreneurs with each other and then with a lot of experts and mentors to help them along the way, because we feel you don't know what you know. We don't know what you don't know until you run into that issue. And having peers and coaches help you survive. So I think it's that knowledge, but it's also knowledge about where to go to get additional resources that helps you to succeed.
And actually, speaking, you mentioned myth. One of the books that I often recommend to all my clients is called The E-Myth Revisited, which I'm sure you're familiar with, by Michael Gerber. I consider it to be like one of the small business Bibles I recommend to my clients. And it's really about how to create a lot of the systems that you might need in a small business. And the E in E-Myth stands for the entrepreneur myth, meaning if you're a good hairdresser, if you're a good yoga teacher, if you're a good whatever, then you automatically know what it takes to run a business. And it takes a lot of different hats. And so that's a good book to pick up.
Now, we're just coming off Small Business Saturday, which is kind of a brilliant marketing concoction right between Black Friday and Cyber Monday, right? Helping big businesses. And right in the middle, a great marketing tool to help small businesses. And shoppers go in and they help these mom and pops and whatever. But what can people do to help what you're doing, Brian, there at Emory, to help these micro businesses in their community?
Sure. Well, one way is shops. You know, vote with your dollars, support, you know, your local restaurants and local micro businesses. I mean, we all talk about the importance of having an interesting, unique downtown. If we don't go and support our local entrepreneurs, we're not going to see that. So that is number one. If you're interested in supporting any of the entrepreneurs that have come through the Start Me program, you can go to our website, startmeaccelerator.org/shop. And we have a little shop there for all the kind of unique things for the holiday season. We also have some cleaning businesses and other kind of things that if you're getting ready for folks coming to town, you can get your house cleaned and ready to go, and lawn service and raking leaves, et cetera, et cetera. And then the other big piece that we can do to help our micro businesses succeed is serve as a mentor or coach in that role that I spoke about. Our 14-week accelerator programs start both in Eastlake and Clarkston in mid-January, run through the end of April. And what we're doing right now is sourcing and recruiting some new mentors to join us. And so we're looking for folks that have a business background or business law background to come in and work with our entrepreneurs. It's a 14-week program. We're pretty serious. We ask our entrepreneurs there to be more, our mentors to be there for more than just a cup of coffee. So they're actually going to be involved in about 8 to 10 sessions. They'll be sitting in those sessions, rolling up their sleeves and helping our entrepreneurs build out their marketing plan and business plans and those type of things. So if anyone out there has, got a background in business and expertise in, you know, marketing or accounting or finance or general operations, we need all of those things. In particular, we're really looking for folks with an entrepreneurial spirit that have been there and done that and know what it means to be the CEO and the CMO and the CHRO all in one.
So you already recruited one of those people today, Kristen Diver. So what is that mentorship for you? If you had tips to give to people who might want to be starting up their own small business, tips to help succeed or at least survive through that initial push, what do you tell them?
Well, number one, I always recommend that my business owners incorporate, whether it's an LLC or an S-Corp. And of course, you should go talk to a CPA to just bless all of that. Number two, like I mentioned earlier, start collecting all of your receipts. Create some kind of a accounting system. Again, maybe book
QuickBooks. Do you recommend going digital on computers? Because honestly, we could probably use your services around here. We get a big file folder.
Sure.
And that's probably not the best. It's probably not what you recommend.
Well, you know, it's funny. Different people think differently. And so I'm not at all averse to paper. Some people, that just makes sense to them, keeping it on a pen and paper. Other people are much more digitally savvy, electronically savvy. And so if that's you, then I suggest, well, then there are lots of different tools and systems that you could do that. But it really depends upon the person.
Okay, I kind of cut you off there. Yeah. Some of your other steps or other tips for small businesses.
Sure. So I would say as you start to get a little bit bigger, it's really hard for a small business owner to let go of certain tasks. They kind of, it's their baby, they want to do everything. And it's certainly okay to hire out certain pieces of your business that you either don't enjoy or aren't very good at. Especially as you get busier and busier and busier. And that sometimes might just be a few hours a week here or there, but it can really make a difference in your time that you spend and what is really important in your business.
All right, this is DeKalb Business Today on DeKalb Business Radio. We're talking with Kristen Diver from System Happy, talking with Brian Goebel from Emory's Guajeta School, the Start Me Accelerator Program. And our third guest is Sandy Yap. Sandy Japp, she is the author of a new book on business. We're having a big conversation about business here. Tell us a little bit about your book.
Great. Hi, thank you. So my book is coming out next Wednesday or Thursday, the 10th, December 10th. It's called Partnering with a Frenemy. It's my first book. It's a book for managers, and it's all about how to better manage partnering relationships, business relationships. It's a little bit of about, you know, the dark side of business relationships. Like, you know, why is it that most business relationships fail? Over 50% of them do on average. And so it's based on 20 years of my research and work, and sort of explains why all that happens.
Now, it's funny. So Kristen's been talking about the fact that as a professional organizer, she will walk into certain companies and just find a big mess because they've made missteps. Your book details, I would imagine, some big messes in business relationships. What are some examples?
Oh, there are many classic examples. The problem is that frenemization is often kind of the closet of the skeleton closets of most people's businesses. So it's not something that they talk about a lot, but people know what it is when I mention it. So I'll just give you some very public examples. Like some of my favorites are Google and Samsung, who they had a great partnership. They both made tons and tons of money. Samsung became the number one market share company, cell phone company in the world. And then they sort of frenemized, and they got to the point where they decided where they both looked for alternative partners to replace each other. And so there's a lot of animosity and conflict. Another classic example would be Calvin Klein and Warnico. This is in the mid-90s. So this is when together they grew the underwear business to about $350 million. They basically, they grew it about six times. And then they became enemies. They were in lawsuits. They were in the press. And basically, Calvin Klein was suing Warnico for design libel and et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, so what happens is you get these partnerships, close, successful partnerships that do really well together. And then they suddenly just fall apart. And sometimes it's a little surprising. And that's the frenemization part of the book.
Should you not go into business with a friend?
No.
Is that the message?
No, that's absolutely not
okay,
the
good.
Message.
Because that's what we did here at Cabinets Radio. I was just checking. We're going to be okay.
No, the message is more that it can be managed and there are ways to manage it. And that's what you need to do to avoid frenemization.
Is it the money that gets in the way and causes problems? I mean, lots of times you see the number one lead or number one cause of divorce is money disagreements. Is that what really drives a wedge in between friends who are business partners?
There are several things. Number one is money. And by that, we mean power differences. So what happens is as the partnership becomes more successful, everybody makes more money, then their differences diverge. Their goals change. Different things become more important. The other half of it is a lot of relational dynamics, relational mechanisms. So just things like distrust and suspicions and, you know, maybe, you know, we don't communicate enough. And so maybe, you know, I forget like how valuable my partner is. And then maybe, you know, we move on to other things. They become less important. For the most part, it's a lot of business relationships just don't work at keeping the business fresh and moving forward.
Are there best steps to take if you find yourself in one of those situations so that you don't end up losing a good friend?
Yeah. So the book sort of outlines a number of different ways that you can kind of build a relationship from the beginning on. Things like maybe having a relational map, talking about how we're going to handle differences in culture and who do we go to. And I have things like I suggest that managers sort of have a network of one up, one down. And I call that my rule of three. And the idea is that you should know well enough the managers above whoever your key contact person is and the people below, that you should always have a strong working relationship, which means that if you call them, they will respond to you quickly and they'll meet with you if you need to. But I also caution against being too friendly, being too close, and spending too much time socializing. So I'm not a real big advocate of longevity as an indicator of success. So just because you've been working together for 20 years, I mean, it's not like a marriage where that's necessarily a good thing and we should celebrate that. In fact, I encourage firms to say goodbye and to move on.
Interesting. You know, you look at it through a corporate lens. You could also look at it through an entertainment lens. I mean, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck are best friends who, you know, write and produce together, but they also go off and do their own things.
Yeah.
Is that a situation where that can strengthen a friendship and a business partnership?
Yes, that's a very good point. So, you know, business partnerships are not like marriages in the sense that they must be monogamous or they should be monogamous. So I think that too much monogamy in a business relationship means you tend to grow stale, you don't get enough innovation, you don't get access to new ideas. So definitely you should always be looking at other partners. And it's always a trade-off between how much effort do you invest into looking at and developing new partners and at the same time not creating distrust or suspicion with your current partners. So your current partner should definitely be a priority, which is kind of the Matt and Ben approach. But you know, that doesn't necessarily tie you down from really pursuing the things that you should be pursuing as an individual business.
Professor Sandy Japp, our guest, she is with Emory University, the author of Partnering with the Frenemy. Now, Kristen and Brian both work in the small business realm. Is there a kind of a dividing line between this is a big problem with big businesses versus mid-sized businesses versus small businesses? Do you even see it at the small business level where maybe they're not even making enough money where it's a problem?
No, not at all. So relationship management, like any time a business works with another business, or an organization works with another organization. So partnering principles can apply to nonprofit groups. It can apply to different groups, even within a firm, you know, HR versus sales versus marketing. So the reality is that most firms, most organizations have to work with other organizations in order to get access to key resources or competencies that they need, and to really both sort of be able to grow faster and move together faster.
Sounds like some great lessons in that book. Talk to me about the logistics. How long did it take you to write?
Oh, man. So the writing itself probably took over a year. But the research that supports the writing has been most of my career, which has been about 25 years.
Wow. Wow. So over the course of 25 years, is this a concept that has changed at all? You're talking about go back to 1990, 25 years ago, the corporate environment then versus what it is now with all the advances of technology and everything else. Has that dynamic changed at all?
You know, that's a good question. And it's surprising because it hasn't. So even in the 1990s, there has been a lot of interest in the issue of partnering. There are always, you know, in very key magazines, whether it's the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, Harvard Business Review, there's always a special issue with a focus on how do we partner better and how do we do this better. So it's something that managers have always struggled with, they've struggled with it for decades. And my idea with, and sort of what I've learned over the 25 years is that, you know, here's sort of a unique perspective that maybe people haven't really thought about. And so that was really the impetus for writing the book.
Okay. We've talked with authors before, and I've kind of learned we don't send them down to the corner bookshop anymore. Really, it's go to Amazon and that sort of thing. How do you find the book?
Yes. Oh, there are many, many ways. Okay. So you can search for my name, Sandy Japp, and that will definitely bring it up. Definitely on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. But yeah, all of those places you can definitely find the book. It's coming out December the 10th.
Just in time for the holiday season.
I know.
There you go.
And
all right.
I want to say we have a link to that book on our Facebook page.
Thank you.
There you go. We'll have it up.
Listeners can find it there and they can link to the book to buy that.
We'll have it up at thecab.businessradiox.com as well. That's perfect. Well, Professor Sandy Japp from Emory University, the book is Partnering with the Frenemy. We appreciate you being here today. Kristen Diver, president of System Happy. Again, find her on the web, systemhappy.com. She's on Twitter, at Small Biz Girl on Facebook as well. You can check her out. And Brian Goble from the Start Me Accelerator program at Emory University. StartMeAccelerator.org is the website. On Twitter, @_StartMe. They're on Facebook as well. Guys, we appreciate having you here. A great discussion today.
Thank you.
That'll do it for this edition of DeKalb Business Today. We'll be back today at noon with our monthly Power Lunch edition, highlighting the food and drink industry here in Decatur and surrounding DeKalb County. Until then, for executive producer Jason Becknell, I'm Matt Holmes. We'll see you next time.